Justice Spears is not here today but will participate in the deliberations and decisions. Three causes will be submitted for oral argument today. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. Judith Ann Baxter, formerly known as Judith Ann Ruddle versus James Ruddle, from El Paso County. Ray Crane versus San Jacinto Savings Association from Paris County. And Pete Marwick, Maine, versus Lawrence F. Haas from Bexar County. These three causes will each be submitted before we take our lunch break. We will take a recess in between the presentation of each oral argument. In the first two arguments, we have allowed it 15 minutes for each side to present argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. The final cause has 20 minutes for each side to present argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel in the second and third causes do not have to be in the courtroom during earlier matters, but please remain nearby so that we can proceed to your cause without delay. All of you are advised that these arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. If you desire to listen to the tapes of these oral arguments, please make application with our clerk. We are now ready to hear argument from petitioner in the first cause.
May it please the court, Mr. Roy Brandy, to present argument for petitioner.
May it please the court, my name is Roy Brandy. Cheryl Jackson and I represent the petitioner in this case, Judith Ann Baxter. Today, this court has an opportunity to remedy a serious injustice by reading the plain words of the divorce decree and telling us that they mean what they say and not something different. The facts of this case are quite simple. On April 12, 1978, the parties were divorced. At that time, the respondent was a CW-3 with 20 years of service in the United States Army.
What is that equivalent to?
That's equivalent to a Chief Warrant Officer, CW-3. Under the terms of the agreed divorce decree that was entered, the petitioner was awarded 37.5% of respondent's gross military retirement benefits, including cost of living increases, if as and when received. That divorce decree became final in 1978 without appeal. Following the divorce, the respondent remained in the military for an additional 6 years and ultimately retired in 1984, attaining the rank of CW-4. Following retirement, respondent made payments of $400 per month to the petitioner in satisfaction of his obligation regarding the retirement benefits. That sum was not the amount awarded in the divorce decree, and the petitioner brought a motion for enforcement and clarification and a motion for contempt, requesting that the trial court determine the correct amount owed to her under the terms of the divorce decree. The trial court ruled that she was only entitled to receive retirement benefits based on the date of divorce and not the date of retirement or the date of receipt of the retirement benefits by the respondent. The Court of Appeals affirmed that portion of the trial court's decision, and she filed her application for writ of error to this court. There are three issues. The petitioner contends that the Court of Appeals erred in valuing her percentage of the retirement benefits based on the date of divorce for three reasons. First, the terms of the divorce decree are plain, clear, and unambiguous. Second, the divorce decree became final in 1978 without appeal and therefore is entitled to res judicata effect. Third, the Court of Appeals impermissibly modified the 1978 divorce decree. With respect to the first issue, the fact that the terms of the divorce decree are plain, clear, and unambiguous, there are two elements involved in calculating a division of military retirement benefits upon divorce. The first element involves the extent of the community interest in the retirement benefits. That is not at issue in this case. That is represented by the figure of 37.5% specifically contained and set forth in the divorce decree. The second element in the calculation involves the valuation date of the retirement benefits. That is what is at issue in this case. The petitioner contends that the divorce decree, the 1978 decree, specifically provides for a date of valuation because by its language it says if, as, and when received, and also orders the respondent to pay the petitioner 37.5% of the total military retirement benefits that he receives each month, and receives each month is in the divorce decree.
Isn't the phrase if, as, and when frequently used simply because at the time of the divorce, the spouse is still engaged in the military service and it would be impossible to pay those benefits at that time because they're not due? So the court uses the phrase if, as, and when to signify the point at which the payments begin.
It is true that that phrase has been used in prior divorce decrees. However, in this case, the respondent had served 20 years in the military. His benefits could have been determined at the time of the divorce. There was no need to use if, as, and when received, unless it meant valuation as of the time of receipt of the benefit.
Well, even though he had served 20 years in the military, he still was not eligible to receive them unless he retired at that point. Is that not correct?
That's correct. He couldn't receive them unless he retired. What I'm saying is that they could have been valued and specifically set forth in the decree if it was the intent of the parties.
Counsel, you say you've been in 20 years. Now, well, when did the retirement benefit vest?
It's my understanding that the retirement benefit vests upon the actual retirement.
Isn't after a certain number of years, isn't the retirement benefit determined as of then, say 20 years?
That's correct.
He's going to get it when he retires, but it's vested.
That's
now,
correct.
If he serves 1 year or 2 years, he's not going to get it.
That's correct. He has to serve the 20 years, and then he is entitled to the retirement benefit. Well, he does not receive it until he retires.
I understand, but as far as the entitlement being vested, it was vested at the time of the divorce.
That's my understanding.
And you say the amount could have been determined as of that day?
That's my understanding, yes.
But you point out that if, as, and when received, doesn't that mean that even though it could be determined then based on 20 years, if later on Congress or by the operational law that was already in effect, that particular number of years service would draw more return than she was entitled to her percentage of that?
That is one way of looking at it.
I believe you said this is unambiguous.
It is unambiguous, both the parties.
Is there more than one way of looking at it?
No, but I believe that it's clear that the language is plain, clear, unambiguous. The Court of Appeals, the trial court, and the parties have all agreed that the language is not capable of more than one interpretation.
So if he had retired the day after the divorce, then she would have got X number of dollars, and there wouldn't have been any question about that, would
there? No, there would not.
If later on that retirement was increased by operation of law, everybody that had retired got a little cost of living pay raise, then she would have got her part of that.
That's my understanding by the plain terms of the decree.
I suppose the day after the divorce, he had gone to work for the post office and worked 8 or 10 years. Would she be entitled to that, any of that postal retirement?
I don't believe so, because the language in this decree specifically provides for payment of military retirement benefits.
Then any military retirement benefit.
That's correct.
Suppose he had joined the Canadian Air Force and accrued some military retirement benefits there. Would she be entitled to those?
Well, again, the terms of the decree provide for, I believe, United States military retirement benefits. I believe the point that you're trying to make is, why would the petitioner be allowed to obtain military retirement benefits after the time of the divorce, which arguably is not part of the community estate? The response to that is that this decree, by its language, provides for just that. If the respondent had any type of objection to the division of the property at to the division of the property, he should have appealed in 1978 before the decree became final. Accordingly, it is entitled to res judicata effect and must be enforced according to its terms.
But you say it became final. Doesn't that mean that the words are final as of the entry of the decree? That the words are final as of right there.
The words cannot be modified.
All right. They are final.
I believe their effect and the duty of the trial court.
Wouldn't the meaning of it been enhanced a little bit if they said as of today or as of the date of this decree?
That would have certainly clarified the valuation date if that language would have been in the decree, but it's not. We have to rely on if, as, and when.
Can't you assume that a decree that's final means as of right now?
Well, I think there is also language in the divorce decree which eliminates any doubt as to the valuation date, and that is contained on page 5 of the divorce decree, and it provides that the respondent is ordered to pay 37.5% of the total military retirement benefits that he receives each month. That should eliminate any doubt as to the valuation date of the retirement benefits.
Counsel, was this case tried or was this an agreed judgment?
This is an agreed judgment entered pursuant to a property settlement agreement. The parties signed, agreed to the divorce decree, and it was entered and became final. Accordingly...
So the gentleman here, Mr.
Ruddle?
Ruddle. Had a choice then after the divorce of either getting out of the service right then and determining how much it was going to be, or waiting and later on letting the community estate continue to grow, in effect, is what you're saying. That the community estate grew after the divorce.
What I'm saying, well, I believe Mr. Ruddle had a choice. If he felt that the property division was not proper, it was his obligation to appeal it at that time. He, by the clear language of the decree, he had notice of what he was signing and what he was agreeing to and what was contained in the divorce decree. And by the plain language, it provides for payment of retirement benefits as received, not as of the date of divorce.
Do you agree that had the case been tried, that the trial judge would have had no authority to award her a portion of income earned after the date of the divorce?
The trial judge would have had, of course, subject matter jurisdiction over the division of the estate. If the case would have been tried, he could have awarded separate property erroneously. But the fact that a judgment, as this court has stated in Segrest versus Segrest, the fact that a judgment is wrong or is premised on a legal principle that is subsequently overruled does not affect the application of the doctrine of res judicata. Therefore, because this decree became final in 78 and was not appealed, it is entitled to res judicata effect. And this court should not allow the Court of Appeals or the trial court to rewrite the decree to bring it into conformity with the dictates of Berry versus Berry. This court has determined conceptually similar cases to the one at bar and resolved them in favor of upholding the doctrine of res judicata. Specifically, in 1981, the United States Supreme Court decided the case of McCarty versus McCarty, which prohibited state courts from considering division of military retirement benefits upon divorce. Prior to McCarty, Texas courts had divided military retirement benefits upon divorce, and in reliance upon McCarty, military retirees suspended payments and ex-spouses were forced to bring enforcement proceedings. The court was faced with the question of whether or not McCarty affected the enforceability of these prior decrees, and in Segrest versus Segrest, this court held that McCarty did not affect the enforceability of these prior decrees and upheld the doctrine of res judicata. Just as McCarty did not affect the enforceability of these prior decrees, so Berry versus Berry should not affect the enforceability of decrees entered prior to it, such as the one at bar.
Do you agree that if this case had been tried to a jury or to a court that this would have been an improper order, that the court had no jurisdiction to do?
I believe that the court had jurisdiction, but I believe it would have been an erroneous judgment.
Because it had no authority to divide after acquired property.
I believe it had jurisdiction, but it could have entered this judgment, and he could have appealed it and corrected the error. I guess I'm agreeing that it would have been error for the trial court to have made this division, but it was his obligation to appeal it at that time.
So your point before us today really is that the reason this is enforceable is because it was an agreed judgment signed by the parties, and therefore you're resting, for instance, on contract also.
I believe that's correct, and I'm also resting on the fact that this judgment is entitled to res judicata effect. The respondent relies on the case of Rankin versus Bateman in support of the proposition that the doctrine of res judicata does not apply in this case. The case of Rankin, however, I should point out, is distinguishable from this case because the Rankin decree did not provide for a date of valuation as the decree does in this case. May I conclude?
May I have a summary statement?
In conclusion, the position of the petitioner that the Court of Appeals erred because the terms of this divorce decree are plain, clear, and unambiguous. Their ruling violates the doctrine of res judicata and also amounts to an impermissible modification of the divorce decree. Thank you.
We are now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the Court, Mr. Robert Pearson will present argument for the respondent.
First letter.
May it please the Court. My name is Robert Pearson. I'm here today on behalf of Respondent James Ruddle. The divorce decree entered April 12, 1978 is the subject of this appeal today, specifically that portion of the decree dividing the retirement benefits of Mr. Ruddle.
You don't claim, I suppose, that there are any other changed circumstances which require relief from this judgment?
No, Your Honor.
So it's just purely a question of the correct interpretation of the judgment?
A clarification, I believe, Your Honor.
Did you handle the case?
No, Your Honor.
Good.
Can a divorce decree be, this kind of language be clarified after the judgment becomes final?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that it is silent to the date of valuation in this decree and therefore can be clarified. By petitioner's own motion, this decree needs clarification. The paragraph in question reads, all right and title and interest to 37.5% of James Ruddle's gross U.S. Army retirement and or disability and or VA disability benefits, including 37.5% of cost of living increases, if, as, and when received. It is my contention that the decree is silent as to the date of valuation. Is it to be valued at the date of divorce or 6 years after divorce at the date of retirement? I would like to address petitioner's points of error as set forth in his application for writ of error. Petitioner urges that the Court of Appeals erred in failing to enforce the plain meaning of the decree. Petitioner states in the application that the phrase if, as, and when received establishes the date of valuation. However, the literal and plain meaning of the phrase if, as, and when received has nothing to do with the date of valuation. It's a phrase commonly coined for use in divorce decrees to divide property of a spouse which is not vested at the time of divorce in that spouse, and it may sometime in the future vest. The phrase refers to contingent interests such as non-vested benefits, disability benefits, VA disability benefits, cost of living increases, not the date of valuation. This court in Searley versus Searley stated that the administration of justice will be served if contingent interest in such retirement benefits are settled at the time of divorce, even though it may be necessary in many instances for the judgment to make apportionment to the non-retiring spouse effective if, as, and when received, and when the retirement benefits are received. In further support of this position, in Searley, the divorce decree had the phrase if, as, and when received, and further went on in the decree itself and stated that the petitioner is to receive one half of 18 of the fraction of the number of years in service until retirement, that being the phrase controlling the date of valuation and not the phrase if, as, and when received. which is in accordance with the case law today, which is the date of divorce. You'll note in the divorce decree today that it is silent as to the date of valuation, that the phrase if, as, and when received refers to the contingent interest. With clarification from this court, the phrase if, as, and when received will be properly addressing those contingent interests and not the date of valuation.
Counsel, we're here today because somebody screwed up on the draft. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, I think we can summarize it. Petitioner urges in the doctrine of res judicata bars the ruling in Berry v. Berry, which is holding that retirement benefits are valued as the date of divorce. The ruling, and alternatively, that the ruling in Berry does not apply retroactively. Well, petitioner places great weight on the fact that in Berry, the retirement distribution was silent. Well, as I've stated in my response to point of error number one, I believe that the date of valuation in this decree is silent. There's nothing in the decree establishing the date of valuation. Therefore, there poses no res judicata issue. Rankin versus Bateman, I believe, is fact for fact almost indistinguishable from the case here before the court. The Court of Appeals considered the facts and issues here today. The decree of divorce awarded the wife a percentage of the husband's retirement benefits. And like this case today, it failed to state the date of valuation. However, it did have a percentage that the wife was awarded. The court clarified the decree by applying the ruling in Berry and valuing the retirement benefits as of the date of divorce as opposed to the date of retirement. The court further stated that awarding a share of retirement benefits earned from post-divorce labor would be invading the separate property of the respondent. Petitioner here is today requesting that an invasion of Mr. Reddell's separate property take place. Alternatively, if the court views a res judicata issue, I would urge that the Berry versus Berry applies retroactively. In the three-prong test set forth in Segrest, the ruling in Berry was not a case of first impression. It was clearly foreshadowed by the ruling in Herring v. Blakely, holding that retirement benefits are to be valued as of the date of divorce. Secondly, retroactive application would not retard the operation of the law, for in fact it would advance the community and separate property principles of law. Thirdly, retroactive application would not result in inequities. It would result in equities, in fact, because again it would protect the separate property of those spouses after the date of divorce.
Counsel, the petitioner suggested that they simply could have put in a dollar amount that would have gone to the spouse. That wouldn't have worked, would it? Because the way the decree was written and the PSA, the property settlement agreement, not only was she entitled to that, but she was entitled to increases due to changes in government benefits.
That's correct. Cost of living increases, we did not know those at the time.
Would it not have been easier to draft the property settlement and decree stating that she would receive X percent, okay, and that percent you would use, the numerator would be the number of years they were married, okay, over the denominator. Do you follow me?
Yes, sir.
They're married 10 years and he's in the service 25 years, and that would be the denominator. That would be one simple way to do it.
That would value it as the date of divorce. And I am stating here today that portion is missing from the decree. The percentage of retirement benefits awarded is in the decree, and the if, as, and when received refers to the contingent interest, not the date of valuation.
How do you respond to Justice Osborne's dissent? And he seizes on the language of total U.S. retirement benefits for the proposition that that's exactly what she's entitled to as per the decree. Total U.S. retirement benefits regardless of future promotions, additional longevity pay, or cost of living increases.
I believe the total refers to the total at that time, including cost of living increases, any VA disability benefits that he should have, but not if that...
Why not promotion?
Because that is post-divorce labor. After the divorce, that would be his separate property. I don't think there's any question that the gross refers to his gross U.S. Army retirement benefits at the time of divorce.
Talking about the word total.
Total as well, Your Honor.
Total U.S. Army retirement benefits, which is the language in the decree.
Yes, Your Honor. The total U.S. Army and total and gross are used interchangeably through the decree. And I would say that refers to the total or gross U.S. Army retirement benefits at the time of divorce.
If, as, when the same are received.
why does that not take into consideration also promotion?
If and when received, I believe Your Honor refers to the cost of living increases, any non-vested interest that he may have.
So you're saying that at whatever the vestment was at the date of the divorce is fine?
Yes, plus cost of living
whatever
increases.
Whatever rights and benefits were vested as of the date of divorce, it's all that the courts could divide.
Plus cost of living increases.
What is your response to petitioner's comment that the decree is unambiguous?
I believe that the language in the decree is unambiguous, but I believe there is some language missing from the decree.
So such as it is, it's unambiguous.
No, Your Honor.
There is unambiguous is what you're saying.
There is unambiguous if it's referred to only as what's there and not expanded to cover the whole date evaluation and all other issues.
And if he had retired the day after the decree, there wouldn't be any problem with that.
No, Your Honor. If the retirement took place then, at the day of divorce, no.
But your contention is that everything that was done after the decree in the way of enhancing his retirement benefits constituted separate property?
Yes, Your Honor.
But if whatever the 20 years, say, if he had been in service 20 years at the day of the decree, whatever 20 years would bring in the cost of living increases, whatever, that's what they were talking about, and if, as, and when.
Yes, Your Honor. He, at the time of divorce, they were not sure, nobody knew if he was going to retire that day or not. The phrase if, as, and when received further refers to when he receives them, if it be 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 years from that date of divorce.
They didn't know whether he was going to die the next day or not and never draw any retirement benefits either, did they?
That's correct, Your Honor. Petitioner urges in point of 3 that the Court of Appeals erred in affirming the trial court's permission by impermissibly modifying the decree. Well, as I've stated throughout, I don't believe it was an impermissible modification. I believe it's a clarification of the missing date evaluation. And the rules of Laurel Care on that issue, the date evaluation is the date of divorce, and any other date would do violence to the principles of community and separate property here today. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Several things in rebuttal, Hunter. First, the case of In re Rister, which was decided in 1974, supports the petitioner's contention that the phrase if, as, and when received includes post-divorce increases to retirement benefits. Specifically, in that case, the divorce decree awarded the wife with a percentage of retirement benefits if, as, and when paid. The husband appealed that decision to the Court of Appeals, contending that that phrase allowed her to invade his separate property and included post-divorce increases to the retirement benefits. The Court of Appeals agreed with the husband and reversed the decision of the trial court, therefore deciding that the phrase if, as, and when received includes post-divorce increases to the retirement benefits. In addition, the language on page 5 of the decree requires the respondent to pay the petitioner 37.5% of the total U.S. Army retirement benefits that he receives each month. Total must mean total received irrespective of how it was earned. There is no limiting language in the decree limiting it to just cost of living increases or just in the case that legislation is enacted that changes the decree. Total means total. In addition, the respondent relies on the case of Searley versus Searley and represented that the language in that decree provided for payment of retirement benefits if, as, and when received. The language in the Searley decree only provided for payment of retirement benefits if and when received. It did not include the word as The decree in this case provides for retirement benefits if, as, and when received, and it is petitioner's contention that inclusion of the word as relates to the date of valuation, that being the date of receipt of the retirement benefits.
Counsel, do you agree that benefits after the date of the divorce are separate property?
Under the present law today, I believe that's a correct proposition.
It was not?
Well, I believe
that... Barry versus Barry?
At the time of Barry versus Barry, I believe that there was confusion in the Court of Appeals regarding whether or not that constituted community property or not, or how that interest was determined. And I direct your attention again to the Rister case and also to the Bankston versus Taft case, which provided for valuation of the retirement benefits as of the date of receipt of the benefits.
The benefits have been decreased after the time of divorce.
I'm sure if there was legislation enacted or something like that.
You've been court-martialed.
Or court-martialed. Or
is there a reason why the parties would not agree to the valuation at the time of the divorce rather than risk that it would increase or decrease between then and the time of payment?
I don't know what the parties were thinking
just
about at the time of the divorce.
They like to gamble, or what is...
This is really pretty standard language, except that they left out part.
Well, and in addition to that language, you have to take a look at the language on page 5, which I believe eliminates any doubt as to the date of valuation, because it provides for total benefits received by Mr. Ruddle each month.
But can you suggest for me a reason why they would agree to that rather than to agree to value it at the time when everybody had an idea of it?
I can only speculate that the attorneys involved did not correctly, correctly provide for the language in the divorce decree.
So in other words, this is not what the parties intended, but it's what they're stuck with.
Again, I don't know. I know I've spoken with my client, and she has informed me that she anticipated receiving 37.5% of the retirement benefits that he actually received for the rest of his life. And that's what she's relying on in this divorce decree.
It was the attorney for the wife who drafted the decree?
I don't know who drafted the decree, Your Honor. May I conclude with a prayer?
Are there any questions? I believe we understand your position.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument. In the first call, the court will now take a brief recess.
Thank you.